Welcome to another episode of Sisters in Conversation. I'm your host, Debelo Motswane. I'm an attorney by profession and the founder of a platform called Sister in Law, which is a platform dedicated to empowering women through legal education. On today's episode, I'm with the beautiful Deborah Mutemwa. Thank you so much for joining me, Deborah. I was supposed to mention that she's an advocate, but we're going to get into that. How are you, Deborah?
I'm fantastic. Thank you so much for having me. It's been 3 years in the making, so I'm so glad we're finally doing it.
Yeah, you know, I went back to you and I was like, you didn't say no the last time. You just didn't see my message, but that's fine. It now makes sense. Behind the scenes, you explained that you were, you know, COVID mommy. Yeah. So that's fine.
Yeah.
It fell through the cracks, but I'm happy that I got the courage to ask you again. So thank you.
Oh, wow. I love that you think you needed courage. I absolutely love what you're doing. So thank you for asking
again.
Okay,
beautiful. At least, you know what? I managed to speak to the one half of of your company. So
yeah.
At least it worked out. Hey.
Yeah.
And I spoke to Tsepiso a few years ago during COVID as well.
Indeed,
I don't know
yes.
if you recall yes. that we yes, but we did ours virtually because we were still COVID. Locked inside.
Yeah,
yeah. So Deborah, please, can we get a little bit about you? Please, can you tell us about your upbringing? You know, what's one of your favorite childhood memories? Where did you grow up? How many siblings do you have?
Yeah.
Where did you go to primary school? Let's just touch a little bit on young Deborah.
Wow. So I am a pastor's daughter. Mm. My father and mother moved to South Africa when I was very young. Mm. And we grew up in Johannesburg primarily. I have three siblings, so there are four of us in total.
Mm-hmm.
I have two older brothers and one younger sister, so I'm the third born.
Mm-hmm.
I have classic middle child syndrome.
Yeah.
Both myself and my fellow middle child older brother.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I had a wonderful upbringing. I went to Glen Hazel Primary School,
mm-hmm.
and then for high school, I went to three high schools.
Sure.
I went to Sandringham, Eden College, and then matriculated in Windsor House Academy for Girls.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's me in a
Why
very brief snapshot.
Why did you have to go
snapshot.
To three different high schools? Were you moving around? Was it...
You know, my mom just was very particular about the quality of my education.
Mm.
So when she felt that, you know, something wasn't necessarily working out well for her, or for us, actually, that was the primary reason, then she would just find a better space. So I ended up in a girls' school at the end
okay.
of it all.
And how did that go?
Oh, it was fantastic. I made, you know, incredible friends. It was interesting to move into that kind of space.
Mm.
I was a tomboy growing up. So, you know, boys weren't really a bother for me in high school.
Okay, okay.
I considered myself one of the boys.
But it was better than going to a girl's school. Like,
No. Then I enjoyed going to a girl's school because I just, you know, had a yeah. lot of girlfriends. And, yeah, I kind of then possibly experienced my femininity for the first time or encountered my femininity for the first time at the girl's school. And that was fantastic. My favorite childhood memory, there are so many, absolutely so many. I grew up in a happy home and I'm really grateful for that.
My I love that.
Mom and dad are loving people.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose perhaps the best part of growing up as a pastor's daughter was, you know, my father would travel to all kinds of places all around the world,
mm-hmm.
you know, from mega churches to rural churches. Mm-hmm. And sometimes mm-hmm. he would take us with him. And I'm really grateful that I got that kind of an upbringing because it gave me exposure to a broad spectrum of life.
Yeah.
You know, in
yeah.
some instances we would, you know, be going to a mega church and we would have a driver and all of that.
Mm.
Other instances we would go to a rural church where, you know, people are using pit latrines. We would use pit latrines. And I really got exposed to just the length of breath and breadth of how people lived.
Yeah.
I'm really grateful for that. And then at home, my parents were just incredibly giving people.
Mm.
So there was never a point in my upbringing where I can remember my parents not helping somebody. There was
okay.
always like an older sister, an older brother living with us.
Mm.
And they just, yeah, they helped a lot of people growing up. And I'm grateful for that.
And what was your mom's role in the church?
Yeah.
And maybe as at home as well?
Yeah. So my mom was a boss.
Mm.
and I'm really grateful for that as well. So she always had a career outside of, you know, being a pastor's wife. So she was obviously a pastor's wife. Very engaged, very involved. But she also worked for South African Airways.
Okay.
So she'd been with the company for more than 20 years, starting as a flight attendant, ending as a in-flight service coordinator. Mm. And so she would travel quite a bit.
Sure.
And she, but, you know, I felt her presence, even though maybe 1 or 2 weeks out of a month she wouldn't be there. I felt her presence because she was just, you know, on top
active,
of it all.
Yeah.
She was incredibly active and she would buy us the best clothes from around the world, from traveling and all of that wonderful stuff. And we also got to travel a lot because in those days, SAA would give discounts to their employees.
I remember that. I think, and I think those family discounts were a little bit too generous because sometimes you just get your friend on a flight Absolutely. And say, this is my younger sister or whatever. I do recall a time when those benefits were a little bit too relaxed.
I promise I did not contribute to SAA's woes.
Look, we'll never know now, okay?
Yeah, but it was wonderful. So my mom's role was just to be a mother and a boss, and she gave me she was a great role model and really somebody to look up to and somebody that I still look up to.
I love that.
Now she's a grandmother. She's actually in the States for 5 months. Helping my brother who just had his first child.
Oh, lovely.
And she's that kind of person. She's so giving, she's so loving, and yeah.
I absolutely love that. And then tell us about when your first memory of wanting to pursue law, or why did you decide to pursue law? You know, is it a calling, or you had seen someone on TV and you're like, I want this for myself?
Wow. What made me pursue law? I honestly cannot say. I think that I was just led to it.
Mm.
Growing up as a pastor's daughter, I was incredibly introverted, but I was forced to be an extrovert. I was forced to be able to talk to people and speak in front of people and debate and all of those wonderful things. And seeing, you know, people from all walks of life and being exposed to justice and injustice in a way, you know, through Christianity, I suppose kind of just led me down this path, this altruistic path. Although I am a corporate lawyer and that's my background, and I still have a very human rights heart to me. And I suppose, you know, my upbringing has a lot to do with that. So I suppose I was led to it. I chose it as one of two options at university. I got into law and I absolutely loved it.
And what was your varsity experience like? Were you one of those, you know, students who were involved in extra extramural activities, part of what is it called, SRC? Or were you just one of those students for, like, you know, in the library 12 hours a day, if you're not in class you're in the library and then go home type thing?
So I had a classic varsity experience in that I never let the study slip, but I certainly had fun with my friends. So I suppose, you know, I was academically gifted.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that can be a blessing and a curse. One of my friends said, you know, we would be out with Deborah, you know, we'd
all be together. Oh, you're the scammer friend.
And we would write exams and somehow, you know, I'd come out with like 90%.
Oh, yeah, the scammer friend.
Not the scammer friend. Just, you know, I was academically gifted, so I enjoyed that. I enjoyed varsity. I made lifelong connections, lifelong friends who are very close even today. And but I also was involved because I was academically gifted, I suppose. You know, it's hard for a woman to say that because it's like seen as bragging.
And
but
I love that. I love that. Thank you for sharing that.
so my lecturers would pick me out, call me out quite often. I was asked to represent my university when I was in second year in the All Africa Human Rights Moot Court competition. And I was one of those people that would win awards. At awards evenings. But yeah, just because I was academically gifted, but I would also work. I would do the reading. I loved reading. Growing up, that was my thing. I could get lost in a book and
I mean, yes, you'd do the work, but you didn't have to work as hard as the rest of us. Like so you were getting away with just just being present in the lectures, I think that goes a long way. And then sort of doing your own like pre-reading or post-reading after the lectures.
Yeah,
and you'd absorb the information.
To be fair, I've always had a questionable relationship with sleep. So, you know, when most people would be sleeping, I would be studying. I would put in the time.
Yeah, yeah. After groove, you'd come back, shower, and then start studying. Okay.
I don't know. I can neither confirm nor deny that there was groove involved.
Oh, yeah. I suppose you said fun, eh? Yeah, fun. Yeah, it doesn't mean groove. Okay. All right. I love that. And then when did you know that you would want to become specifically an attorney and that it was time to start looking for articles in your journey through varsity? When did it occur to you that, okay, this is what I want to do. This is the path I want to take. Mm. This is what I'm interested in.
Yeah. I think the big firms, firstly, they start recruiting very early. Mm. So for those that are watching and they're studying law, you would need to secure articles in your penultimate year if you want to be with one of the big fives. And around second year, the big fives start taking on vac students, so vacation work, where you go and work at the big firm for 2 or so weeks. That's how it was done back in my day.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
I can say back in my day because this was like 2012, 2013.
Yeah.
So, you'll do 2 weeks of vac work, and I was privileged enough to do 2 weeks of vac work at two of the really big firms, two of the top five firms, and I was offered a position at the firm I really wanted to end up, and that's how I got onto the journey of, or the path of becoming an attorney.
Mm. So the firm you're referring to is Webber Wenzel?
Yes.
Is that where you did your articles?
Yes.
And how did you then end up, you know, focusing on commercial litigation or commercial law?
So, yeah, now we're talking 2014. That's when I started my articles. Webber's has this, all of the firms rotate. So you would spend a few months in a 6 to 8 months in a particular team and then rotate out as a candidate attorney. And I was privileged enough to start my very first rotation in the pro bono litigation department.
Okay.
And that's where, you know, I re-engaged with the altruistic reason why I studied law.
Mm.
And that has remained a part of my career. Marie Haythorne, who was the head of pro bono, is still a great mentor to me.
I love that.
If you studied around my time, there was a case study around the battered woman syndrome. I'm being a dork now.
Yeah, because I'm just like, wait, I was studying to write. Like back then.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we did graduate around about the same time. I was definitely studying to write, girl.
No, one of the cases, I would take note of those details, was run by him and his team. And it was a really incredible case about, you know, just women's rights to defend themselves in abusive relationships. And I don't want to get into it, but I recall being impacted while studying by that case. And I just felt so lucky to work with the attorney behind that as my first job. So I was in the pro bono litigation department for 8 months. Then I was in banking and finance.
Mm.
And I'm just going to leave it there.
Okay. I really like that you've spoken about the pro bono aspect, because a lot of people really almost underestimate the role. Like they're attaching it to, I don't know, you know, free work. You're not being as challenged as much the people in banking and finance, or the people in, you know, I don't know, commercial, the people who are doing insolvency. So I really like that you highlighted that it really brought you back to your altruistic self, and you enjoyed that role. I think it is important to highlight that the pro bono department does a very important job in society.
Absolutely. You know, when I was at Webber's, I was also part of something called the Webber Wenzel Leadership Network.
Mm.
And in my second year of articles, I was the chairwoman of the Corporate Social Investment Committee.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole point there was to encourage the young professionals within the firm to remember that we have a broader role in society as legal professionals, to give back and to contribute to making this a better country for everybody. So it's definitely not something to take for granted. Regardless of how deep in corporate I went, I always had a pro bono project. I was always sitting on some board or advising, you know, an NGO like Power or Corruption Watch or what have you, because I do genuinely believe that, you know, with great power comes great responsibility. And the law is power, and an understanding of the law is power. And I think, you know, we should, or as legal professionals, not take that undermine seriously.
That. Yeah. I love that. Yeah. Now, you need to tell me why you said banking and finance, and you said, I'll park that there. Was there?
It wasn't my forte. No, it wasn't my forte. The numbers and the agreements could run to thousands of pages. And at that level, as a candidate attorney, you're doing something called conditions precedent. So you're making sure that the resolutions are in place, and, you know, that the various consents have been signed, and that if there are any third party, you know, implications to a particular transaction, that those are catered for, and that, you know, those implications have been, you know, considered, and if there were any obligations, they've been met. And so it wasn't exciting for me.
Yeah.
It is exciting for some people, and I think to each his own.
And it's important that you say that. Yeah. I like that. Yeah. I think you and I are the same in that regard, banking and finance. Nope.
Yeah, but it was an incredible team, and I met some really amazing people, and I was really grateful to have worked with the, you know, learned from the head of the department at the time as well. But that was my second rotation. My final rotation was in mergers and acquisitions in what was called Corporate 4 at the time. Mm-hmm. And I worked with an incredible team headed up by Johannes Goos, who at the time that I was leaving Weber's, he also left to go and found DLA Piper.
Okay.
DLA Piper's office here.
Yeah.
And that was an awesome time as well. Met some really great people, worked on some really great transactions. And it really, you know, I was given opportunities that I never would have had I been working elsewhere. So, sure. Yeah.
So just the 2 years articles experience, what was that like for you? If you can just sum it up into one line.
Well, let me give you an example. I was living at home whilst doing my articles, and my cousin was in the country visiting, and she was there for like 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember that. She tells me, "Yeah, I was in your room. I shared a room with you." That's how much I worked.
Oh my goodness!
I worked like crazy, but I also did. I'm a little bit of an overachiever, so I also did my master's in public international law in my second year of articles as a part-time thing. I had 2 years to complete it, but I completed it in 1 year.
Okay.
So yeah, I was working crazy hours, but you know, I used my youth, let me say.
And, you know, looking back on the hard work that you put in back then, was it worth it?
Absolutely.
And how can you encourage somebody that is not necessarily convinced? You know, I feel like lately we have a culture of just doing bare minimum, getting by, these terms that are called like quiet quitting, weirdest, craziest thing ever that I'm, you know, just learning about. And I really feel like the current cohort, they're very afraid of working hard, of putting in the hours, of ensuring that they set themselves apart at an early age or earlier in their career to be, you know, chosen. And they really take it for granted that, you know, ensuring that you're seen at the beginning can really just set you up for success. What kind of advice do you have for somebody who is listening in and they're just giving bare minimum, like, girl, stop it, get up?
Where to start? I have so many thoughts on that. Firstly, I think one of the most impactful things in my career was having a mentor. And I had mentors from very early on. My very first mentor was Olga Mushwe. Shout out to Olga. She was incredible. She made partner at Weber Winslow at 28 years old.
Oh.
So I had really, you know, somebody incredible to look up to.
Yeah.
So I had no excuses, firstly. Secondly, I watched this talk in my early 20s that said 20 is not the new 30. And it talks about the fact that You know, people defer doing the hard things to later on in life because they think there's time. There isn't time. And it's not to say, oh, if you haven't achieved certain things by your 20s, you're a failure. No. But I think to those that are in their 20s and they're doing the bare minimum, I would encourage them to watch that talk because, you know, life is a gift, ultimately, you know, and that's
Do you remember who the talk is by?
It's a TED talk. And if you Google 20 is not the new 30, you'll find it. It's a blonde lady. I cannot recall her name. I watched it so long ago, but I still remember it to this day. I'll try to look for it
and put it in the comment section as well. Thank
you. Yes, yes, please do. It's an incredible talk. But yeah, the final point is that life is a gift. Not everybody gets to wake up and have the ability to do what they need to do. And I read this quote that, you know, said procrastination is the arrogant assumption that God is going to give you another opportunity tomorrow to do what you could have done today.
Drag me.
And I'm not saying I have the formula right. I'm not saying I don't procrastinate, but life is a gift. And if I can take it back to, you know, just who I am as a person, as a Christian, you know, the Bible says in anything you do, do it with all your heart, all your mind, as unto the Lord. And I feel like that ties in with the idea that life is a gift. That, you know, whether you think it's just a random gift, you know, that you're here or, you know, God woke you up in the morning to be able to do something because he has a plan for you, because you're, you know, you must become who you're supposed to be because it matters. Maybe not in the grander scheme of things, but maybe just for one other person's life down the line. Life is a gift, and if you have something in your hand to do, do it with all of your might.
Sure, love that. Yeah. So, I mean, apart from being very busy and forgetting about your poor cousin staying with you for 3 months and shacking up in your very bedroom with you, what is one of your best memories of your articles? And the reason I'm asking that is that a lot of the time we highlight how toxic articles were, and we really forget that there should have been moments where we should have celebrated our highs, you know, celebrated whatever we managed to achieve during articles, or any really fond memory of your experience, whether it was with someone or whether it was a personal, you know, win on a matter that you were working on or fortunate to work on.
Yeah. I mean, I have no complaints. I do have thoughts about the toxicity of articles and how it can be toxic. It wasn't entirely my experience. On a balance, my experience was very pleasant. But that being said, I'm not the kind of person that doesn't see injustice just because it's not happening to me. So I did see, you know, some of my colleagues not necessarily being treated the way they ought to have. So I don't want to take away from that. But personally, my articles experience was phenomenal. It was fantastic.
I love
it. I'm so grateful for it. I'm so grateful that I got to get the training I got at the institution. You know, Weber Wenzel's been around for over 100 years, maybe 160, 70 years. And the quality of the training is unmatched, unparalleled, and it set me up for a successful career as a legal professional. My real highlight was working with Murray Haythorn, who is now at the LRC, still doing good work, still fighting the good fight, and still a great mentor of mine. The one case that we that I worked on whilst I was there was the Tides Law Center case. Well, no, Tides Law Center was the client. It was amicus in the Zimbabwe torture dockets case, where basically the Constitutional Court had to determine whether, you know, South African law enforcement had jurisdiction to investigate crimes against humanity when it happened in a neighboring country. The acts happened in a neighboring country, but the evidence was here. And that was such an important case, you know, I think for the continent at the time and for what was happening in Zimbabwe at the time and still is happening, unfortunately. And at 21 years old, to work on something like that, it was life-changing.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And maybe just to say, yeah, it was life changing, and it has stayed with me, and it has defined, I think, my career and the lens through which I determine what is important in my career.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. And then, you know, just give us a brief overview of your time spent as a clerk.
At the Concord.
Yes.
Yeah. So I was fortunate enough to be...
This was after articles, hey?
After articles, yes. I was retained as an associate. But I knew I wanted to go to the court. So okay. I did let them know that I would only stay on for 6 months and then I would go to the Constitutional Court.
Mm.
And there's a whole process to getting in as a clerk at the
Constitutional Court. Yeah, I can imagine. So I just want to know how you knew that I'm only here for 6 months and then...
Because you have to apply way ahead of time.
Okay.
And then you get interviewed way ahead of time as well. And I remember when I applied to the Constitutional Court, you have to submit a written piece. Mm. And the written piece I submitted was a criticism, or a critique rather, of an aspect of a Constitutional Court judgment that was handed down by those very judges I was applying to work for,
yes.
And it was something about, it was a point about, you know, international law and jurisdiction, or concurrent or complementarianism in international criminal law, something along those lines. I was like, oh, you didn't quite get this right. This is what complementarianism means in this context. That was my paper. And then I got 6 interviews.
I mean, because now they wanted to hear more.
Well, I mean, at 22 years old, I didn't think that was it. I thought, oh my God, they're going to scold me. But no, it was the most pleasant experience.
I can imagine. Wow.
Pleasant experience. I got to interview with the Chief Justice and a number of the other judges, all of them obviously legal giants in their own right. But Justice Khampepe,
how was that experience?
Of our interview, she said, Deborah, I just wanted to say to you, that as a woman, as a mother, and as a black person, I am proud of you.
Sure.
I don't know if she would offer me the post to be her clerk.
I love that you still remember word for word. What an impression that created.
Absolutely. I mean, we still speak to this day. And indeed, she has been, you know, incredible, an incredible force in my career. But it was wonderful to work at the Constitutional Court because you are working and researching on the biggest matters in the country.
Literally, yeah.
And sure. the records are voluminous and the legal questions are tough and rigorous, and, you know, the work is top-notch. Mm. And, you know, you get to do this work and then debate it with some of the best legal minds in the country. I would wholeheartedly, you know, recommend that any legal professional, you know, that wants to possibly, you know, wants to practice and possibly end up at the bar, does a stint at the Constitutional Court. It's incredible. Mm. You get to see how judgments are written. You get to be part of that process, you know, the vetting process,
sure.
The referencing. You know, you go into such granular detail, into the law, into the facts. It was an incredible springboard for me. After getting such wonderful training at Weber Wenzel, learning to think at that level, at the age that I did, that was also an incredible privilege.
That sounds so beautiful. Thank you. Thank you for taking us through that journey. You've really put it in such a way that, literally, I was at that interview with you. I could feel it. I could feel the warmth and just, you know, sheesh, all the knowledge that you gained while you were there.
Yeah.
And then I think I had another question. I think it was related to your time at Concord. Is that during that time, is that when you decided that you actually then wanted to be an advocate?
Yes.
Is that where the seed was planted?
Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. I saw some incredible advocates, you know, present at that court, and I thought, I want to do that one day. Two advocates that left a particular impression on me, and I'm going to name them by name.
Yes.
They are my seniors now, were Emma Weber and Frances Hobden. Mm. They spoke at the Constitutional Court as young as they were, you know, they presented. And it's usually a thing that's left for the more senior advocates. I can't recall the cases, but, you know, they stood up and they spoke so eloquently. And as a woman, for me, that was just incredible. I was just so
blown
inspired.
Away, yeah.
I was blown away. And I knew that's what I wanted to eventually do. But going to the bar is quite a commitment, and you also need to be ready, because ready to start your own practice.
Sure.
To swim in the ocean, to run your own race. And I felt that I needed a little bit more time in the market as an attorney before I made the jump, so I could set myself up for success when joining the bar. This isn't to say that, you know, you can't come out of varsity and join the bar and make a success out of your life. There are many, many examples of people who did just that. But for me, I had a lot of responsibility very early on. So I couldn't necessarily take that gamble. So I needed to have
a
proper savings account set up for the rigorous year that is pupillage.
Yeah.
I needed to also be sure that I would be getting the work and I would not be struggling, you know, for 2-3 years, you know, whilst I set up my practice. And I'm grateful that I did that. And one of the advocates that I mentioned actually advised me that, you know, it's great, but it's tough. And as a woman, you know, these are the things you need to think about. And I took her advice to heart, and it paid off.
I love that. Sure. Yeah. And then when in your journey are you and Tepiso starting to have discussions about starting your own thing?
Yeah.
And what made you guys then just act on that instruction from God, if I can put it that way?
Definitely was an instruction from God. Tepiso and I are very much similar in our belief systems and our work ethic and everything. I have such great respect for her. You know, the other day I was telling my sister about somebody who I thought is just so incredibly intelligent. And she was like, wow, they must be so intelligent because you're intelligent. I'm like, no. I was like, no. But you know what? As far as rating people, Tepiso Scott is high up there. She's incredible. And so when we were at the Concord together, she was clocking for the acting chamber. And so she clocked for two judges, Justice Mba, who was from the Supreme Court of Appeal, and Judge Mojapelo, who was at the time the Deputy Judge President of the South Gauteng High Court. And so we were sitting one day in the foyer at the Constitutional Court, and Justice Moseneke had just ended his term in about May that year. And he was launching his book, My Own Liberator. And, you know, he quoted a line from his book that said, we cannot outsource the responsibility to liberate ourselves.
Yeah.
And me and Tabisa were sitting next to each other and we said, let's start a law firm.
Sure.
We said,
because you didn't want to outsource the responsibility
to liberate ourselves. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
And then everything after that.
Yeah, we spoke to the judges. I told my judge, she had been an attorney as well, Justice Khampepe. We spoke to Judge Mojapelo, who was an incredible mascot for us in our early formative years. Mm. He would have breakfast with us at least monthly, or, you know, there or so as schedules allowed, there by olives and plates and vits before court.
Yes.
He introduced us to Advocate Mojangu Gumbi, who was, you know, and still is a legal advisor to President Mbeki. And so, you know, we were really touched by grace in that sense.
I love it.
When we decided to start it, there were so many people rallying behind us that, you know, we would have had to try hard to fail.
And I think that answers the questions that I've asked so many times in previous episodes of whether in your own journey you've come across men who are intentional about mentoring, you know, especially Black women in the profession.
Absolutely. I can name so many. Even to this day, I have people, you know, men that are mentoring me, and I'm so grateful for that. You know, not everybody's so lucky to meet good men that are invested in and understand the challenges that women have to face in the legal profession. So definitely Justice Mojabelo is way up there. He was very generous with his time, still is to this day, and very grateful for that. He was, yeah.
And you know, during our conversation, you've touched a lot on, you know, either a mentorship or a mentor, and I see that that's one of, you know, one of the main threads in your life, or in your career rather. How are you paying it forward as Deborah? Paying it forward, mentorship, mentoring other women who are coming behind you, or young legal practitioners. What are you doing?
Yeah. You know, giving back is a huge part of who I am, from a Christian ethos perspective, but also just from a gratitude perspective. I think giving back is an act of gratitude. So definitely I have mentees, and, you know, I've always had a mentee or two since I started, we started the law firm. Time didn't allow when I had my kids. So that phased out. But now I'm at the bar and I'm fresh. I'm a first year. I'm a baby junior. But I'm grateful that some of my peers, we're colleagues, we're the same year, and I don't take that for granted, you know. But, you know, they see me as a mentor, and I take time to, you know, work with them, through their documents and, you know, the like. So paying it forward is, I think, an act of gratitude. So definitely a thing that's important.
Thank you for mentioning that your peers, you are, you know, same level of, you know, first year doing your, being an advocate for the first year, but they see you as a mentor. That's important, because a lot of the time we think that the mentor-mentee relationship needs to be somebody who's, you know, older than you, and we see it from an age perspective, and not necessarily understanding that even though we are peers, the same age, even the same age actually, I may have more experience in a particular field or particular area of practice which you are trying to actually come into. So that relationship can exist even if we went to the same varsity, same age, and had similar roles. Those roles could have been you in human rights specifically, and me in family law, and now I'm trying to move to human rights, right? So I love that you mentioned that.
It is important, but let me not lie to you. I am a little bit older. Just because I started my career very early. I think this year will be 10 years since I started working as a legal professional. But still.
We've been at it for a while.
We have been at it for a while.
Can you tell me about your naturally, you know, starting a company or being the boss is is it difficult? It's a bit difficult. It's a bit challenging. But can you tell me what are your highlights as Tumbo Scott? Like, what's that one matter where you and Sepiso were like, yeah, we are the girls. We think we are.
Wow, there were so many wins, and we made sure to take stock.
Yeah.
I think for me, the biggest win is I've stepped back from the business altogether. And Sepiso is pursuing an academic career. But Tumbo Scott still stands strong.
Yeah, you see.
To build a resilient business that, you know, there's a new managing director and clients are still coming. And, you know, this.
It's so the identity or the brand hasn't changed, right? Yes. And that's your work.
Absolutely. I think building something that isn't centered around you, building something that is beyond yourself is really important. That's a huge highlight for me. We started Tumbo Scott when I was 26 years old. Dr. Scott was 27. We were babies, to say the least. We had giants.
I feel like I'm still a baby. Like, even in my 30s, I'm just...
Adulting is another story altogether.
I'm just a baby.
That conversation needs,
so
26, needs a whole...
27.
Yeah, 26, 27. And we were standing on the shoulders of giants. Let me not lie there. And just one point I wanted to make on that is that, you know, they say if you want to go fast, go alone. But if you want to go far, go together. So never feel too proud to ask for help. Never feel too proud to approach somebody and ask them to mentor you. Pride is what holds a lot of people back. Always, you know, put yourself out there. The the highlights for me were when I think I was 27, the year after we founded it. I was listed in the Mail and Guardian 200
yes,
Young South Africans.
I think that's when I started following your journey.
Oh wow.
Yeah,
that was some years ago now.
Yeah.
And that was, I didn't even know that that was a thing.
Yes.
But it was so encouraging.
I love it.
You know, the presenter, I can't recall, it was Anele. She said, you know, this is just, you know, on the road to success. This is just a pit stop to let you guys know that you're going in the right direction and keep going.
Mm.
And so for me, that was really important because I took a 75% pay cut to start the business.
Mm.
And, you know, you struggle. You're the CEO. You're also the chief dishwasher. Yeah, you're the chief maintenance
doing
official.
Everything. Doing everything.
Doing absolutely everything.
Debt collector.
Debt collector. Entrepreneurship can be rough in the first few days. to be told to keep going. And then things just like, got better
place.
From there, you know.
Yeah.
I received an award from the Premier Gauteng Premier's Award for Youth Excellence in Justice and Law. And these awards don't, you know, it isn't like they're not the basis of my identity, but it's encouragement. Yeah. It's so encouraging,
and I think they're the confidence boost that we need. And
absolutely.
There's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
Absolutely.
Like every time you get an award, it gives you the confidence that you didn't know you needed, right?
Yeah.
Because you think, oh, I've got this. Yes. And you're just like, okay, I didn't know I needed this.
Yeah.
And you get it and you feel good and you keep going. So
yeah.
I love that.
You know, you're just working. You got your head down. You're working. You look up and people are like, oh, we see you.
Mm.
And that is really special. I had a full circle moment like that this week, actually. A senior lecturer emailed me from out of the blue saying, you know, hi, Advocate Mutemwa. I got a hold of some heads you worked on in a case, and this case is now a case study for an assignment for my university students. And
I didn't even know
that that was a thing that could happen,
especially
2 months into practice. But it was like a thing that I didn't know I needed. But anyway, the highlights at Tumbo Scott were those. We bagged very early on, 2018. A big corporate client, one of the biggest banks. They have been a client since. Even now, the new managing director is managing that client relationship. That was a moment for us because people aren't readily willing to give two young black girls a chance in law.
And I wanted to actually highlight young.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And already there's just we know the nuances. Young.
Yeah.
Black.
Yeah.
Female. So. That's incredible.
It took a lot of courage to do
incredible.
What we did and to be validated in that way. That was amazing. We also did a big project for the African Union.
Mm.
And that was incredible and incredibly rewarding, both financially and also in terms of the outcome.
Great. I love it.
Yeah. And then in 2020, I think, I was pregnant with my firstborn. 2021, I was pregnant with my second born. My firstborn, I got pregnant in 2019. She was born in 2020. And somewhere between there and, you know, in those years when I thought, oh, you know, I'm just hanging on by a thread. I'm running this business. It's COVID. You know, things aren't stable or certain.
Yeah, yes.
So many clients, pulled out. But we got so many other clients.
Mm.
We pivoted into the direction of litigation.
Mm.
And that is actually the year I got featured in Forbes 30 Under 30.
Sure.
That is the year that we quadrupled our annual income, our revenue.
Mm.
And that was special for me because in a moment where you feel like you should be failing, maybe we should close shop and, you know, number one, not only do you get clients and, you know, the business survives, but it thrives.
It does 3 times better than any other year.
Yeah, and now I'm part of this global community of high achievers. The Forbes community is just breathtaking.
Yeah.
Just breathtaking, yeah.
Sure. Incredible, Deborah. Oh, it's been such a pleasure chatting to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
For coming to tell your story.
Thank you.
Now, in the last 5 minutes that we have together,
mm-hmm.
Is there a question I haven't asked you which you'd like to touch on? Anything of interest? Any words of motivation for young practitioners or students who are listening to this episode? Mm. Any words of encouragement that you'd like to say? Any gems? Just really anything that you'd like to share on this platform that you think will really change someone's life? Or even a moment for you to take stock of your own journey now that you've had an opportunity to reflect, because I believe that's what this conversation allows you to do, you know. Just take stock, reflect, and these are your 5 minutes.
Firstly, thank you so much. I'm so grateful, you know. I never would have dreamed that somebody would want to talk to me about my journey. Oh, wow. Little old me.
Look, you have Forbes talking to you about your journey, please.
Yeah, but even that, you know, I didn't expect things to go so well. I just worked hard and believed. And, you know, I think that's the one thing to young, aspiring female legal practitioners, work hard and believe. There was one question that you had sent me that I did want to touch on. You know, what was the most difficult encounter or moment in your career?
Thank you, because I wanted to ask that, and I just thought, oh my goodness, I've actually really just been highlighting, or rather asking you to share the highlights of your career. But I think the lowlights are very important for us to touch on, just so that people know that sometimes you do fall upon hard times where you are, you know, second guessing, doubting, or just like, oh, what on earth is going on? So please do share that with us. I'd love that.
I'm not
going
to do justice to your intro into my moment. But there isn't a particular moment. I would say that there have been a few moments in my career where, you know, I had to stand on my integrity.
Sure.
And I think as legal practitioners,
important,
you will be faced with situations where your integrity is on the line.
Can I tell you, I wanted to tie that with your intro where you said your dad is a pastor.
Yeah.
And I wanted to tie, like, you know, the law and
when
we're comparing it with Christianity and those beliefs. Okay, so thank you for touching on that.
Absolutely. I think, you know, one of my favorite verses in the Bible is from Psalms, where David writes, "Let integrity and uprightness preserve me." You know, this career is long. If you love the law, you're going to be in it for a long time.
Yeah.
And what is going to set you apart in the long run, and I've only been here 10 years, is your integrity. You know, and there'll be times where you can, you know, play people against each other. There'll be times where you have opportunities that you can, you know, exploit for the bet to come out more on top. There are times where you have failed to deliver and you have to have a tough conversation and not make excuses. You know, there will be times when it's a conversation of integrity with yourself, where you accord yourself a certain sense of dignity, you know, and the environment you're in is incongruent with that dignity you have within yourself. There's that personal integrity to say, even if I must go hungry for the next few months, I'm going to leave this space. I'm going to work hard to get into a better space. So I think there are going to be very, very many moments where your integrity will be called in, you know, your integrity will be on the line. And I must say that you must never cross that line.
Sure.
Because
there's no turning back, hey?
Yeah. It is integrity and uprightness that will preserve you. And it will open doors for you when you're proven to be a person of integrity. It will open doors for you. I was invited.
I love that.
I was invited to sit on my first board when I was 28 years old on a listed entity. And I think it's because the person who put my name up knew me. They knew that, you know, when push comes to shove, Deborah will do the right thing. She will speak truth to power. And so integrity and uprightness, let it preserve you. Second thing, words of wisdom. You know, there's somebody who says it. I actually know exactly who says it, but I'm not a fan of him. It's Arnold Schwarzenegger. And I think he was giving one of these commencement speeches at one of these universities. And he said, you know, you have to dig deep down, dig really deep down, and decide who you want to be.
Sure.
Not what, but who. Who you are comes before what you do. And I think that working on yourself as a person, regardless of, you know, how the world perceives you, perceptions shift and change and gossip comes and goes, but who you are at the core of your being will define your life. So you have to decide early on, especially to young girls in the legal profession.
Sure.
It's a high-powered space. You come across high-powered individuals. You come across successful men. You come across people that, you know, want to take advantage of you. You need to decide who you are and what you stand for and what you will not stand for, and stand on that. So, yeah, dig deep down and decide who you want to be. Before what?
That has to be drops, Mike. There's nothing further I can ask you, because you have just put that so beautifully. And just once again, Deborah, thank you so much for sharing those gems with us in the last 5 minutes. You did not come to play with those 5 minutes. You were like, okay. So thank you so much for just really painting that so beautifully. And I really hope, you know, your words and pearls of wisdom have landed on the right ear. Mm-hmm. Thank you for your time. Thank you for sharing your journey with us, and can't wait to see you under the Forbes 40 under 40s list, under 50s as well.
You're so kind.
I think there's an over 30s under 50 now, hey?
Yeah.
And they've done away with the under 40s. Mm. So I know where I'll see you next.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me. I'm very inspired by what you're doing.
Thank you.
I'm very inspired by your passion.
Thank you.
And keep going. Honestly, keep going.
Thank you so much, Deborah. You at home, I know you enjoyed today's episode. If you absolutely enjoyed today's episode, please don't forget to like, don't forget to subscribe, and don't forget to share this episode with your loved ones. Until next time, bye.